The J.J. Johnson Sextet featuring Clifford Brown on trumpet, that's Capri. I'm Paul Kivy, and we have reached the end of Volume 34.
Coming up next, it's Minnesota Mixtape with Malachi Coons. This is Independent 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Find playlists, podcasts, and more at KEXE.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Mixtape, a weekly spotlight on the Minnesota music scene. I'm your host, Malachi Coons. Thank you for joining me this week. Here is who we'll be hearing from on today's show. Artists like Charlie Parr, Molly Mayer, Cornbread Harris, Boss Mama, and Lutalo. We've got brand new songs from Mike Coda, Kiss the Tiger, The Federalis, Yonder, and Craig Finn. In addition to the music, I'll share info about a new organization seeking to improve working conditions for Minnesota musicians. It's all on the way here on Minnesota Mixtape. This program is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and produced at KAXE Community Radio on the north bank of the mighty Mississippi. We will begin today's show with Monica LaPlante and her quarantine-inspired compression.
find enough to fold. She saw herself in the honey play. It's a criminal world. In a debt, yeah, all in all, it stays so prominent. That's for real. Lack all common sense, still all roll with it. Roll with it. Roll with it. Why won't talk to us? Mimicking that old octopus. Pinching all pocketbooks. Couldn't even mean real a lot to us. Watch you grace the keys like Dino did the day your dad might drown. Arizona's new personas, I've got miles to go. While I know I'm not well spoken, I was joking, you wore tears. Lack out common sense, still I'll roll with it.
Thank you.
indie rocker Lutalo and Ocean Swallows Him Whole, a song from his debut album, The Academy. Later on in the show today, we will hear new music from Mike Coda, who is a former bandmate of Lutalo's. Just before him was Velvet Negroni. This is Minnesota Mixtape. Thanks for tuning in and supporting local music. Here is a new song from country rock band The Federales about a beloved Minnesota pastime, pull tabs. It's Cardboard Cocaine.
Down on the line.
from Mattawa, Minnesota, just off Highway 35, that is Boss Mama and the Jebberhooch with Sweet Molasses. Minnesota Mixtape returns after this with the latest from Craig Finn.
Join us Saturday, September 6th for Grand Rapids River Fest. I'm Jennifer Barr, and I am so excited for this year's lineup. Music starts at 3 o'clock with Alan Sparhawk, a prolific and versatile musician best known as the frontman of Low. His many side projects over the years reveal a musician unafraid to experiment. Then we'll hear Jeremy Albino. His songs are grounded in the gritty storytelling of classic country music propelled by the rhythms of old school R&B. And then Margot Price. She has something to say but nothing to prove, and in just a few solo albums she has cemented herself as a force in Americana music. We'll end our night with Courtney Barnett, one of Australia's most successful musical exports. She has played many festivals around the world, including Coachella, Bonnaroo, Lollapalooza, and now Grand Rapids River Fest. Find tickets and more info at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com. See you September 6th.
Now's your chance to see one of the most acclaimed indie rock artists of the past 20 years at Grand Rapids Urfest, going on Saturday, September 6th. In addition to Courtney Barnett, you'll get to see Alan Sparhawk, Jeremy Albino, and Margot Price.
Don't let the bastards get you down. Don't sell your heart to no businessman.
You can get your tickets for Grand Rapids Riverfest at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com. You won't want to miss one of the biggest concert nights in northern Minnesota this year.
You're listening to Minnesota Mixtape on KAXE, people-powered radio. Thanks for listening today. We receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community, working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at ColeraineBank.com, member FDIC. Now a message paid for by the Minnesota Department of Health. Sometimes you just need to talk about it, but it can be hard to find someone who really listens. That's why there's 988, the support that meets you where you are. Confidential and staffed by trained folks who want to help you when you need someone to talk to. Call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org. Now time for more Minnesota Mixtape with Malachi Coons. You can hear it every Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at 3. You're listening to Minnesota Mixtape on KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Programming is supported in part by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. A lot has changed in the past year. The speed limit has not. Speeders can expect to be stopped. Please slow down. Extra speed patrols now on Minnesota roads. And support comes from Thrive Up North, sharing the stories of a welcoming community of people who've chosen to make Itasca County their new home. Promoting all the area has to offer, including natural amenities and jobs and healthcare, manufacturing, and more. Offering an incentive package to help you with your move to the area. Learn more at thriveupnorth.com. Coming up at 4 o'clock today, Sarah is your host for On the River. And at 7 o'clock, it's Green Cheese Trivia, 2 hours of live trivia hosted by Mike Berry. And at 9 o'clock, Z McQueen is bringing us some ambient electronica music for KAXE After Dark.
swim like a fish in the sea all the time. But if that's what it takes to be free, I don't mind. Still moving me. Still moving me. It's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving or I can be still. But still moving me. Still moving me. La 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 la. It's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving or I can be still. But still moving to me. Still moving to me.
Morning. It is just before 5 o'clock. You're listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org. I'm Jennifer Barr. Coming up next, Milk Street Radio, 6 o'clock on the media, and 7 o'clock, weekend edition news from National Public Radio. Patchy fog early this morning, then becoming mostly sunny, high 77 to 80. Our lows overnight in the low to mid 50s. Patchy fog once again tomorrow morning, then sunny highs in the upper 70s to low 80s. And looking ahead to Monday. Labor Day, we do have a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with mostly sunny skies and highs in the upper 70s. At 9 o'clock this morning, Stay Human. It's all about the look, words, and music for spirit and courage. You can also hear it tomorrow evening, 5 p.m.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. If you light a fire on a hydrogen balloon, you just might explode. And yet early aeronauts figured out a way to brew hot coffee mid-flight.
They used a technique first recorded among Arabic magicians and medieval pilgrims.
The amazing story of food in the air that's coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX. I'm Christopher Kimball and this is Milk Street Radio. Mohawk Airlines had a problem. It was 1960 and they were still stuck with a fleet of pre-war planes.
One of the airline executives, as a joke, once mused that the experience was like being aboard an old train, so they decided to decorate the aircraft to look like a very old Pullman car.
The food service also matched this theme.
Stewardesses dressed like dance hall girls passed out beer, cigars, and pretzels.
Over 2 years, Mohawk served 30,000 cans of beer and a ton of pretzels on these flights. It was a huge success.
So this airline took having very old aircraft and made it into a virtue, and they made enough money off of those flights to buy new aircraft.
The remarkable history of in-flight dining, that's coming up next on Milk Street Radio from PRX after the news.
Coming up September 6th, we are so excited for Grand Rapids River Fest. Opening up will be Alan Sparhawk, who recently talked with Kari Hedlund about his new album with Trampled by Turtles.
I remember the time going like, man, I can't tell if this is any good. I'm questioning myself a lot here, but I don't know. There was a little bit of obligation, I think, because those guys had made room for me, put their trust in me, so to speak. I kind of had to tell myself, you know, I just need to push through and just sing, do the best I can and trust that I'm in the hands of good people. I feel like I did. I found my voice. Thank you for thinking of me. I'm glad to be there. Mim and I grew up out past Bemidji, so I'm looking forward to it.
Grand Rapids River Fest with Alan Sparhawk opening up, then Jeremy Albino, Margot Price, and Courtney Barnett. Get your tickets at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com.
Turn up the problem.
This is Mill Street Radio from PRX. I'm your host, Christopher Kimball. Airplane food has a terrible reputation.
Of all the things that the airlines do to you, the food is the worst.
What do you think this is?
Ooh, well, about 7 hours ago, that was lasagna.
But in the early days of aviation, it was more like fine dining.
A lot of people think that we started out with something that would be like an economy class and then diverged to create first class. No, it went the other way.
Flight attendants used to slice charcuterie to order. Caviar was served in coach. So where did things go wrong?
What's the deal with airplane food?
That's coming up later in the show. But first, it's my interview with Rebecca Rupp, whose book details the strange histories of common vegetables. It's called How Carrots Won the Trojan War. Rebecca, welcome to Milk Street.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So, how did carrots win the Trojan War? I had to read the book carefully to figure that out.
Well, supposedly, as the Greeks were moving in on Troy and were walled up in the Trojan horse, they ate carrots, and the quote was, to bind their bowels. Because obviously the horse was a terrible place for a bathroom break.
And they didn't know how long they were going to be in there either, I guess. Right?
Hopefully just overnight. But it's not clear that carrots do any such thing. In fact, the Greeks and Romans used to serve dishes of boiled carrots as aphrodisiacs.
Cabbage seems to have a pretty long story behind it. It was to prevent drunkenness, good for hangovers. In the Roman times, it was the vegetable of choice, I'm just quoting from you, for curing colic, paralysis, and the plague. That's pretty good. It was also good for a palliative for gout, hiccups, my favorite, shrew mouse bites, and claims that a child washed in the urine of a cabbage eater will never be weak or puny. I'm just fascinated by how, well, of course, I guess 200 years from now, we'll look back and say the same thing about the 21st century. But all of this mostly nonsense, I would say, grows up around a food item.
A lot of this comes out of Pliny's Natural History, which was written in the first century CE. 37 books. He was accumulating all of the world's knowledge and not vetting any of it. So basically, anything he heard, he wrote down in his encyclopedia. And this is where we get a lot of this stuff, like asparagus will cure scorpion stings and elephantiasis. And if you are rubbed all over with mashed asparagus in olive oil, you will never be stung by bees.
Henry Ford, he was really into vegetarian cooking and carrots. So he had a 12-course all-carrot dinner at which he was the guest of honor. It sounds just awful. Carrot soup, carrot mousse, carrot salad, pickled carrots, carrots au gratin, carrot loaf, carrot ice cream, all accompanied by glass after glass of carrot juice.
Carrot cake might have been all right.
Well, yeah, there you go. A little fat in it and sugar. The other thing you talk about, which is really interesting, is that when people are growing carrots, for example, in the 19th century, they were growing really big carrots, right? Not what we have today.
Yeah, some of the early cookbooks are fascinating. You'll see carrot recipes where it says boil your carrots for 2 to 3 hours, which you would think would reduce your carrots to absolute slop.
Maybe they liked really overcooked 80-pound carrots or something. I don't know. But you said the 19th century, growers boasted of 2-foot-long carrots that were a foot or more in circumference, and they weighed up to 4 pounds. So I would think they were probably pretty gnarly to eat, right, if they were that big.
I would think they would have been woody and dreadful.
Yeah. Chapter 6 of your book is called How Celery Contributes to Casanova's Conquests. This seems to come up a few times in your book. So is celery a real aphrodisiac?
Well, celery seems to contain androsterone, which is a steroid that supposedly acts as a pheromone. Hmm. It's found in male sweat. It's found in boar saliva. And the guess is that if you munch down a lot of celery, particularly the leaves, and slurp up a lot of androsterone before heading out on a date, you may be exuding pheromones that will attract females. Or maybe not. But celery was nicknamed the vegetable Viagra for a while.
Well, you're right. The Egyptians used celery stalks to treat impotence. The Romans used them to treat constipation. It seems like half of everything was used for that. Middle Ages, a treatment for gallstones, a palliative for wild animal bites. There you go. See, like shrew bites. That seems to be a theme here. So corn is, you know, the success story of all agriculture, I guess. It's now, you have this long list. It's used in pancake mix, shoe polish, instant tea, mayonnaise, surgical dressings, cat litter, golf tees, and soap. You say, Chapter 7, corn creates vampires. So how does it do that?
Well, that was kind of a hoot of a story, actually. Corn is not a complete food, so it lacks specific amino acids. So if you're living on a diet that's almost exclusively corn and corn products, you're going to develop a dietary deficiency disease called pellagra. And people who suffered from pellagra were sometimes called the butterfly people, because the first sign would be the development of a sort of butterfly-shaped rash across their face. Hmm. But if this went on long enough, this could kill you. And many of the symptoms, such as sensitivity to the sun, lethargy, people believed that this could have been the source of some of the vampire stories. Because once corn was introduced to Europe, nobody really knew how to prepare corn. And a lot of people developed pellagra. And it's kind of interesting to think that maybe all Dracula needed was a few more vitamins in his diet, not blood.
So cucumbers, this is one I really like. Food historian Waverly Root describes cucumbers as, quote, as close to neutrality as a vegetable can get without ceasing to exist. That's a pretty good definition. So, of course, today, cucumbers have almost no flavor, at least here in the States. Was there a time in history where cucumbers actually had flavor?
I don't think so. They're 96% water, and the other 4% is nothing much. They were supposed to be great thirst quenchers. I came across an ancient Egyptian recipe for cucumber water that sounded absolutely awful, in which you cut the end off the cucumber, then mix up the insides to make it slushy, then plug the end back up again and bury the cucumber for several days. And then when you dig it up, you've got an interesting drink.
Hmm. So when you go back in time to do this research, were there some things on the positive side that you thought, well, hey, you know, maybe we should do that today? Or maybe there was a point to this. Were there some good ideas from Roman times or Jishim times or Sumerian times?
There were some odd ideas. You know, you're not going to get red beets by watering your beets with red wine. But, you know, you have to give credit to certainly a lot of the Neolithic farmers. Mm-hmm. You know, practically everything we have in gardens today had been domesticated and developed by about 3000 BCE. So anything that could be made edible and delicious, these people did it. And we don't know who any of them are, of course. But that's, I think that's a wonderful story.
Rebecca, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This was delightful, Chris. Thank you so much.
That was Rebecca Rupp, author of How Carrots Won the Trojan War, curious but true stories of common vegetables. Now I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Moulton, to answer a few of your cooking questions. Sarah is, of course, the star of Sarah's Weeknight Meals on Public Television. Her latest book is Home Cooking 101. Sarah, so I've actually a couple times had good food on an airplane. I say a couple times, out of like 300 times. Have you ever actually had a good meal on a flight?
Let me tell you a funny story. Years ago when I used to work for Good Morning America, and I was the food editor, we did a whole segment on who had the best airplane food. So it was me and a camera guy, and we pretended that we were newlyweds. And we flew around the country on all the major airlines at the time.
Wait. This was a job, and this...
Yes. And
God, nice work if you get it.
Back then, they served you whole meals, you know, real mm-hmm. meals.
I remember.
Not the same as first class. And so we flew on every airline. I mean, well, every. I think five, the top five. Just around the country, sometimes a couple flights a day, he would shoot me eating like, oh, isn't this fun? We're on this, you know, honeymoon. And I can't remember who won. I think it was Transair. Was that one of the...
TWA,
I think, won.
So how was the food?
Not great, no, but call me silly. I always loved airplane food because I just love getting on a plane. You know, it's like TV dinners, you know. It's many little different tastes and everything.
I hate it, but once, many years ago, we were in London and there was a hurricane coming. So we had to get out of town because they were going to close the airport. So the only thing I could get was a Lufthansa ticket, first class.
Oh, shucks.
Well, I had my...
First class is a whole different ball
game.
I had points.
I didn't have to pay for it. So that was...
First class is
waiters
great.
With white jackets. They had all the wonderful cured meats, you know, all the germs. At first, I always say, no, I don't want to eat anything. And then I looked at the food and went, wait a minute, this actually looks better than that horrible sandwich I bought somewhere in the airport, you know. That was amazing.
Yeah. Well, in first class, anything is possible.
No. If you get upgraded to first class, the food's not great. The other place that's good is Japan Airlines. I mean, going to Japan, they'll give you like udon and a broth.
Oh, nice.
Very simple. That actually is pretty good, but that's about it. So you've never had a great meal.
No, I've never had a great meal, but I always enjoy it, as I said, because I love, it sort of reminds me of being a kid with TV dinners and all the little compartments.
And some adult is serving you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's take a call.
Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
This is Carrie from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi, Carrie. How can we help you today?
I have been attempting for a couple years now to try and make a good, like, cinnamon crumble topping for, like, a cake or a muffin. And I've tried different, you know, variations on like brown sugar, white sugar, you know, how much flour. Sometimes they say, you know, to use melted butter or like melted but not too hot. I've just tried everything I feel like I can think of. And I never make anything beyond sort of a crust of topping. I don't get those good like crumbles. And I was just wondering if you had any good advice for that.
Well, first of all, are you following anybody's recipe in particular?
I've tried a couple different recipes. The last one I tried was actually like Betty Crocker or something, like some really well-known, as opposed to like random recipes you find on the internet.
Right.
And that didn't work for me either.
And when you say it doesn't have the crumble that you want, what do you mean? Like big chunks of crumble?
any chunks, big or small.
It's just one.
I always end up with sort of
smooth, flat crust.
Yes.
Okay. And what are you putting in it besides flour and sugar and butter? Anything?
Well, I did actually try some ground almonds one time, and that did give it sort of a better texture, but I still got the same issue. It kind of feels like when you have the wrong temperature butter for your cookies and they get too flat or too crispy. You know, I've tried refrigerating it before I bake it, and that didn't help either.
Okay, well, here's what I would recommend. Are you using white sugar or brown sugar?
I have typically used white sugar.
Well, I would try using brown sugar. I think that will give you more depth of flavor. It has a little more moisture. I would use cold butter. And what ratio of flour, butter, sugar are you using? Do you know?
Oh, man. So more flour than sugar.
Right, that's correct. You can either do 3-2-1 or 2-1-1. So let's say you do...
Or you could do 9-1-1. That always works.
You are my 9-1-1.
You could do 2 parts flour to 1 part sugar and 1 part butter. I would go with cold flour. I wouldn't mix it too much because you said you want those clumps. If I was going to add nuts, I'd add chup nuts. You know, leave them a little coarse because you want some texture. Might throw in some oatmeal for a little more texture. Don't overmix it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think?
Definitely cold butter. I agree. You do it by hand in a bowl. Don't put it in a food processor. The Betty Crocker recipe you had, just go through that recipe for me. Do you remember the proportions and how you did it?
I don't exactly remember the proportions, but the thing that was kind of different was it said to melt your butter and then let it start cooling off a little bit, but have it still be runny rather than, you know, chunky like a cold butter.
I think that's the problem.
I think that's the problem,
too. Cold butter is much better.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your help.
Yeah, I think we absolutely agree on
and,
that.
And, you know,
one.
We all like Betty. But.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried lots of different recipes, and this time I thought I'll go for like a, you know, old school, a classic, like surely they'll know. And, you know, 100 people could make a recipe and it'll come out different.
That is so true.
Yeah, no disrespect to Betty at all.
Well, give that a shot.
Yes, Carrie, thank you.
I will. Thank you all very much for your help. I love your show. Thanks so much.
Thanks for calling.
Yes.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
This is Mill Street Radio. If you're stumped in the kitchen, please give us a ring anytime. The number is 855-426-9843. One more time, 855-426-9843. Or please email us at questions@milkstreetradio.com.
Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
This is a Michael Durst in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
How can we help you?
Sarah, how did you make the Det Burger when you worked at the Del Rio in Ann Arbor, Michigan?
Oh.
I was a loyal customer and classmate.
Oh, my goodness. Did we go to school together?
I didn't know you, but when I looked up what happened to the Del Rio a few years ago, I learned that you had worked there as a waitress and a chef.
Correct.
And I was a frequent customer there when I was a student at University
of Michigan. Wait. Did you guys go out together or something? Is this one of these, like, lonely hearts, you know, surprise
Michael,
phone calls?
I don't know. How was it for you?
No, unfortunately.
So wait, what was the Del Rio?
Okay, so the Del Rio was a bar in downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan that was a jazz bar. So they had jazz a couple days a week, Sundays, I think, always. And it was, you know, hippy-dippy, run like a commune. I remember going to the opening meeting where they all said, we all share. And, of course, nobody drinks on the job. And, you know, we're all very serious.
Uh-huh.
And then the very first time I'm on the job, we do shots. You know, it's just part of it. So it was like one big family. It was a really wonderful job. But the food was actually very good, even though it was sort of fast food. But at any rate, one of the things that it was known for was this one dish. It was called the Det Burger, named after a bartender, Bob Detweiler, who one night was bored. And so he invented a burger and named it after himself. And the original was so good, but the ingredients, you're going to be horrified. It had a quarter pounder that was cooked on a flat grill, right? You know, flat top. And then the Det mix was put on top of it. And the Det mix was canned mushrooms, canned sliced California olives that had no taste, freeze-dried green peppers. I didn't even know they existed.
Awful.
Oh, yeah, it was really awful. So that was the Det mix. So you would cook the burger, and then you would put the Det mix on top. So it was, that was olives, green peppers,
and
canned mushrooms.
Cheese.